adopted.
Okay, so do you want to perhaps start by briefly taking us through the red line decision point document from the last meeting so that we can consign that to the dealt with other than any major issues basket?
Yes, it's say going to it section one or section two. It's the overarching principles. I think the most important bit was on last call, so that's about 4 weeks ago, was the non-contentiousness within the territory. I've added one note, and that is that the working group adopted it tentatively, awaiting further comments from, if any, from GAC members.
What number is that, Bart?
That's on page 2, section 2, the IDN CCTLD string should be non-contentious within the territory.
Ah, gotcha. Sorry, yeah. So that's note 3.
Yeah.
Tentatively adopted, right.
And so I don't know if you want to address ask Manal if there are any comments or first want to go through the document.
Let's take comments.
Okay, Manal, are there any comments from the GAC on the non-contentiousness?
One question was how will ICANN be in a position to judge whether an application is non-contentious in a given territory? And I tried to answer this question already, and I said that this is going to be more clear within the process, and that we're not there yet. We did not discuss all the details within the process. I'm not sure. Are we in a position to answer this question now, or leave it to the process section where it is going to be more detailed and where we can seek more feedback from the GAC?
Well, Manal, the real question is whether we will actually ever provide. I'm not saying we won't, but the question is whether we will actually end up providing more detail. At the current situation with on delegations, for example, which is that
your voice a bit? I'm sorry, I'm not clear about what you said.
Can you not? Is that any better? Can you still not hear me?
Yes, this is better.
It's better? Okay. The question is whether we, or the first question is whether we will provide any more detail. If you look at, I'm not saying we won't, but will we? If you look at the current delegation and redelegation policy, such as it is, for example, it says that there should be a demonstration of local internet community support, and there isn't currently any additional information provided, and that is has been sort of is demonstrated in different ways depending on the territory. So the question is, would it be advisable for this policy development process to say it's non-contentious? I'm just using these as examples. It's non-contentious in the territory if no one objects. Well, clearly that's ridiculous because, you know, any single person objecting doesn't mean that it's contentious. But the concept that we might try and create a policy that designates levels of objection that would be considered to be contentious or non-contentious is fairly hard, I would have thought. I'm not clear, you know. Given that most of the existing policy relies to a degree on the common sense of the board, I'm unclear as to what would be expected of us from government to satisfactorily deal with the issue of non-contentiousness. Unless it's a statement that what government says goes, which you're not going to get out of this policy development process, because there has to be an ability for significant objection to come from a community, I would have thought. So I guess, from my point of view, I'd be looking at some guidance from governments as to what it is that they would expect. Not that I'm expecting you to be able to answer that question, but I'll just respond to the point. Are you still there?
Manal dropped off. She's being redialed.
Cool. At what point in my diatribe did we lose her?
Will you ask her again when she...
Oh, yeah.
It's a really flaky connection, isn't it?
Manal drops off a lot, actually.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Mm. Well, does anybody else want to comment on what I said?
This is bad. Maybe one comment, say, there is the assumption that, say, in your words, and probably, I don't know if in any, everybody's mind, but say that the non-contentiousness or the process will be similar to the delegation request. And I wonder whether or not we should continue down that path. So that was the assumption on the fast track as well.
I don't understand. What do you mean? How can non-contentiousness in claiming the string be in any way dealt with in the same way as the delegation?
Or in a different way? Say,
what do you mean?
What I mean is, for instance, if you look at the way the ISO codes are associated. There is a very there is a different method to involve governments than say in what we do for the string. And you could argue, and I'm playing a bit the devil's advocate here, is that say the delegation of a IDN CCTLD to an operator is something different than selecting a string, and therefore the non-contentiousness for the string is something different than just for the delegation itself.
Well, yes.
Hello?
Yes?
We're creating...
Hello?
Yeah, Manal's back.
Yes, but we've got beeping as well.
I'm very sorry. I was disconnected.
Don't worry, Manal. It's perfectly fine.
Somebody put their phone on hold. The operator is trying to locate who it is.
Well, it's not me.
Well, obviously it's not you, Cheryl. We can hear you.
Well, that's why I said it, Chris.
Yes, exactly. Thank God you're here. Manal... How far did I get in my polemic before you dropped off the call?
Manal dropped off again.
Oh, for God's sake. Are we dialing her or is she dialing us?
We're dialing her.
Oh, which means that it's... God.
This is unworkable.
Okay. Sorry, Bart, let's get back to where we were. I don't see how you can... a claim that something is meaningful... Let's take the steps. You're not going to get an IDN CCTLD string approved without government consent.
Yeah.
So it's a given for every application, effectively, that the government has consented. So using a mechanism further down the line on redelegation or delegation that actually involves government not consenting or government refusing or whatever it is isn't going to work. What we're talking about, and let's be blunt, is we're talking about a circumstance where the government comes along and says Tania is a meaningful representation of Ruritania, and that's what we want. And there is a large amount of objection from organisations, people in Ruritania, saying that they don't think that it's the right thing to have. And what I'm saying is, if there is disquiet with that amongst governments, then they should tell us what it is they would like us to do.
It's, say, again, for argument's sake, say, if there is, say, this, I would say, the support from a government, and not a bit stronger than just support, say, almost a proposal for the for a string, and it's only in case there is objection, strong objection from within the territory for that string, you have an issue. What you could also argue, or what is in between, is if there is a proposal for a string by a government, but there is no objection, would that go?
Say again.
It's
a proposal by a government and there is no objection.
Yeah.
Yes.
So no objection, meaning there is either no objection, so there is no additional documentation.
Well, no, that's not the same thing.
We've said,
haven't we, that when you apply for the string, you should provide, quote, hello?
I just said proof.
Documentation.
Yeah, documentation,
Not proof, but you should provide, evidence, quote, unquote, that it is meaningful and that it's accepted. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Manal, are you back?
Doesn't sound
okay.
Like it.
She should be back.
Hello?
Manal,
hello?
Yeah.
Are you there?
Yes, I'm back.
You need to talk quickly before you drop off again. Did you hear what we were saying, Manal?
No, can I just know where we are now on the conversation?
Yep, we're still talking about meaningfulness. And I said, if the position of governments is that they want a clear definition of what would be acceptable to show that it is meaningful, then they need to tell us what it is they want us to do. Currently the situation is that the applicant comes and says this is a meaningful string, and in a circumstance where that string is not listed on any of the lists that we've referred to, then it must be shown to be meaningful. And we say that it must be non-contentious because what we don't want is competing, is to end up in sort of a circumstance where somebody comes along with something that they claim is meaningful and there is clearly objection to it in the territory, but that doesn't matter. And we say it does. If that makes governments uncomfortable, then I think they need to tell us what it is they would expect us to do. Is the expectation that simply what government says goes? And if that's the case, then I think we need to be told that.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Your last sentence was, if the governments are not okay, they should say how we should go about it?
Yeah, I'm saying that if there is a concern amongst
mm-hmm.
any governments that the current statement in our draft document is not sufficient mm-hmm. or does not provide enough detail, then they should explain to us what they think is missing.
Okay.
Because right now right now there is no explanation. Right now it's simply a question, which is you know, how do you show it's not contentious? Is that right?
How would I can judge, and why not the relevant public authority that would take the final decision on whether string is contentious or not?
Thank you. That's a really specific question, and the answer to that, I think, is because there will be circumstances where just because the relevant public authority says they want something doesn't mean that it is actually representative.
Sure, but is it enough that the string is not objective? I mean, is it an obligation that the government should provide more, a documented thing to prove the non-contentiousness?
Well, I think this is that's a really good question, and I think this is a fundamental point, and it comes not just in respect to IDNs, but it comes in respect to delegations, and perhaps specifically also in redelegations, where there is currently a requirement for there to be demonstrated that there is local internet community buy-in, and that is undefined. There is no definition or explanation as to how you show that, and it would be fair to say, wouldn't it, Manal, that a number of governments struggle with that concept? But the point is, the only other alternative is to say, if a government says this is what they want, then that's it and there is no question. And I'm not sure that that's necessarily acceptable, is it? I mean, on the one hand, we say that governments need to be involved, and that's obviously the correct way of looking at it, but surely the community should be involved as well, shouldn't they?
Yeah, I mean, probably the main concern, and it's not just the IDNs, as you said, is how much documentation is enough, and how would the documentation be judged, and
different from one country
to another. So,
okay. So maybe we're talking two different things here. If what we're talking about, if we're saying the principle itself is fine, but some guidance on how you demonstrate it would be helpful, that's fine. But or are we questioning the principle itself? Because I got the impression we were questioning the principle itself.
Yes, and the comments I got, and I already forwarded the three on Dorf, and I can also share on the list, was explicitly mentioning that why not the relevant public authority judges the non-contentiousness internally and not just submit the documents and make the item judge.
Sure. Okay.
I've got a question. And I'm just trying to understand. For example, you have one particular national authority that is applying for it. It's not going to be the whole government generally. It's going to be one segment of a government. You can have issues, and I'm talking about, presumably in the most open of governments, issues where, for example, you've got multiple languages and you're going for a term that is culturally sensitive in one of the languages and not in another, and I understand the need to keep it on a significant to nation basis on who's making these determinations. Is there a way, and I'm just asking, of bringing in other parts of our government, as if
one authority is asking for it, there is internal strife on it that must be somehow adjudicated by some other part of the government. There's a part of me that's not sure that that's enough. And then, is there any remedy? We're constantly in the G side of the world saying, well, you know, an international panel of, you know, international jurists or whatever is a further recourse when there's such an issue that one can sort of say, certainly just having a cultural group of rabble-rousers or the business community or whatever within the country say, no, that's not good enough, is not sufficient. But if something like that happens, is there sort of extra authority or supernational authority?
Well, actually, supernatural might be better.
Well, it depends on which government we're talking about, but, you know, that can sort of have some notion of a chain of appealing to without leaving things that are acceptable to the notion of national sovereignty.
Okay. Interesting question. I think the notion of an international governing judiciary may be significantly challenging for a number of governments. But it seems to me that
there was also other authorities within that same government.
Sure. Manal?
So was Avril's point, because I'm not clear about her voice is a bit far, was Avril's point about what if the government itself has two authorities and each one is saying something different? I mean...
I guess that could be a result. What I'm saying is if you've got, for example, the telecommunication has said, yes, you know, this is what we want, and you have either a cultural group or a national business group saying, no, for whatever reasons, either cultural bias or, you know, you're taking something out of the business community that should be the business community, still within the country. And then you go to another authority within the government, for example, those governments that have, you know, adjudicating authorities, or those countries, that basically you have to have more than one within a government if within your territory you have differences.
I'm asking
and having ideas. I'm not proposing.
But I think this is an explicit conflict. I mean, and this is not the normal case that the GAC was talking about. I mean, and when two different authorities within the same government have different proposed strings, this is explicit. There is a conflict. Or even if there is something proposed by the government and another thing is proposed by some other business community or even civil society or whatever within the same country, then again, this is an explicit conflict. But I think what I understood from the comments that were submitted was that in a normal case, a government should be able to submit the string, and if there is no objection, then, or if there is some judgment that has to be done, this could be done nationally and then submitted. It doesn't have to be submitted and judged through the ICANN.
But that's not what happens, and that I don't think that is the objection.
In the normal litigation,
the objection refers specifically to the need to have any statement as to meaningfulness. It seems to me that the way that it's currently drafted is exactly what you just said. which is that the government puts in an application, just say it's government, because often it will be, or it'll be an application backed by government, puts in an application for an IDN and makes a statement that says that this is a meaningful representation of the territory and is non-contentious within the territory. There's no suggestion that ICANN or whoever is managing this process would then, you know, reach out into the territory and look for objections. What there is is a caveat that says that it must be non-contentious, which means that if objections arise, then they need to be looked at. And there are some circumstances in which the people managing this process might go back to a government and say, we have received loud, vocal, and mass objections from various organizations and societies in your country saying that this is not the right term. You need to sort that out. And I'll give you a simple example, Manal, and I accept that this is extremely unlikely, but then I'd argue that almost any of these examples is extremely unlikely. You could logically and sensibly have a circumstance in respect to the European Union where the EU applied for a representation of a territory, a state of the European Union, in a particular script, and that territory itself objected. Now, what would happen then? The EU is a government. It's a representation of European Union, but the country, let's just say Greece for the sake of discussion, objects to the use of that term and says it's not meaningful. Surely they must be allowed to do that.
Chris, I think there are some issues here as well. First of all, and again, this is based on the assumption that under the overall policy, the application or the request process will remain confidential. So what will become very, very difficult is to raise any objections if there is an application. So that's one. A second point is, I think, if there is an application, say for argument's sake, from what you just stated, from the EU, but there is no additional documentation, what you do then? Should ICANN seek further support or not?
Yeah, but I understand that, Bart, but I think that's the next step down. We have to get clear on the principle first.
Yeah.
Before we fill in that. But I also think, Manal, this is up to you, but it seems to me that this is not an issue I think this is an issue that needs to be debated with the people on the GAC who have raised it as a problem. I don't think it's fair or to them or to us for you to be, attempting to sort of act as a single person bridge. So I wonder whether we can find a way of having this discussion either in Cartagena or on a telephone conversation with GAC members that have a concern. Because if it turns out to be a concern for only one person or a concern for only a small number of people on the GAC, that's one thing. And if it turns out to be a concern for a large number of people on the GAC, that's another thing.
Okay, I understand.
So it's unfair that you should be expected to have this, this discussion when, it's points being raised by other people.
Okay, so fair enough. I'll direct them to the recordings of this call, and if this is not satisfactory enough, then we can arrange for something. Again, depending on how many comments
you have. Yeah. Or worst case, we spend some time at our joint CC GAC meeting talking about it in Cartagena.
Mm.
Which I'm happy to do as well.
Can I ask another question?
Yes, Avery.
Okay, it's actually two questions. One is,
Well, you only asked for one question, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, in which case I'll have to make it a compound question.
Exactly.
In terms of the notion that Bart brought up, that these are all these applications are kept secret and confidential, is that actually a principle that's been decided upon? And in terms of dealing with the issue of a country showing that something is non-controversial and that they have checked on that, does evidence of hearings and public calls within the country come into the considerations at all, so that if a country says, listen, we had a hearing, or whatever a country does or calls something equivalent to a hearing, and you know, people came and spoke, and there were no major objections, it's done. Are those things expected to be part of applications? Are there guidances that recommend those things? And again, back to, is it really a principle that these applications are indeed kept confidential when there really isn't an issue of competition? So my question is, why would they be kept confidential?
The original reason for them being confidential was based around the possible technical challenges that may arise, and trying to mitigate against embarrassment for governments of putting a name forward publicly, which then turns out to be technically not acceptable. And therefore,
in your fast track, but is it really a necessary consideration in the slow, more deliberate path?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, it may be, it may not be, and it's a very good point. I mean, I think that the embarrassment factor still exists in the full-blown policy, because these strings are required to pass a number of tests, and everyone accepts, even the most strident non-policy government people accept that the technical requirement is true and real, and that therefore there will be circumstances where because it looks like something else and there have been several of these in the fast track that have been politely sent back for adjustment, and so the question, I think, Avery, is not should they be public, but more how soon can you make them public? In the process.
And do some technical checks, perhaps up front before it becomes public.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just that the fact that the whole application process would go through in secret seems to be highly problematic.
I accept that, in the sense that you can hardly claim, can you, that it's non-contentious if it's not even a tiny bit known about. But to get to your second point, which is the concept of hearings or publicity or whatever in a country, the only point I would make to you in response to that is from my own personal experience of dealing with the IDN CCTLD applications for Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. And in the case of both of those, genuinely, the people that I spoke to were totally perplexed by the concept. And these were not government people in the sense of ministers or whatever. These were the people who run the CCTLDs in those countries, were genuinely perplexed by the concept that anybody would question the decision of their ruler. In the case of Dubai or the case of the Arab Emirates, the response I got was all straightforward. We trust the prince, and he's decided that that's what we should have. I mean, as it turns out, it's not contentious at all because it's Emirati, but that doesn't matter.
But that's okay. I mean, perhaps a political part of me would object to that somewhere along the line. But basically, if a country is saying we posted it out, we nailed it a ban on every, you know, lamppost or on the side of every truck, and, you know, nobody objected because, well, no one would, still, they have done whatever the people in that country accept. They've been notified. Everyone said, sure, the king says it's cool. We think it's cool. And they go on with it. But at least it's in public. You know,
sure.
And so it's not me putting in my prejudice about, well, people should always object to what governments say because that's what people do. It's sort of saying if the people know and their system says, hey, that's great, then that's not an issue.
Yeah. But?
I have one more question, and this is more for looking forward, say, going back to what you said and what Avery asked about confidentiality, it is part of the process document, and it's up to the working group to discuss it further if we go down the line. But my question is whether or not we should make a distinction, as we did with meaningful documentation about meaningfulness, a distinction between, say, on the one hand, the long and short name of a country or territory as listed on the UNGEGN manual, should there be community support, could you even argue that is non or there is contentiousness about that bit, or and distinguish that from, say, the abbreviations and maybe other interpretations of that name?
But I think that's right. I mean, isn't it a given that it's a given, isn't it, that if it's the long or short form name from the list, it's non-contentious?
Yes, but we better make this explicit, because it's nowhere explicit, and you could argue that, say, community support is even needed for those names.
Well, let's make it specific. Let's explicit then, because it seems to me that if you choose to pick, look, let's be clear what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
What we're talking about is that, and you know, I can't really think of doing this in any other way but using an example. So anybody I'm about to offend with this example on this call or listening to any recording of this call, I humbly and abjectly apologize. But if the ruler of Zimbabwe wakes up tomorrow morning and decides it would be a really clever idea to apply for an IDN in a script that they use, and that script is Mugabe, there needs to be an ability to prevent that from occurring. And the way you would prevent that from occurring is by saying, is it A, meaningful, and B, is it contentious? Now, if the complete population or the mass of the population of Zimbabwe raises no objection, then my guess is you're stuck with it. But there has to be an ability for people to say, no, that's not acceptable, as a representation of this territory, surely. So everyone agrees or everyone disagrees?
Chris, my mail dropped again.
Good heavens above. Chris, why don't you pursue the line of discussing this when you've got your meeting in...
Yeah, we need to. We can't do this. Christina, I don't understand why now. It's weird. I can have a one-on-one telephone conversation with Manal with absolutely no problems whatsoever. And I have no idea, but this happens every time on these calls. Mm. Is she on a... I don't know if she's on a landline or a mobile. But, you know, this is making it impossible. She's being dialed out by our operator?
Yes. She is. I think she's on a mobile. I'll see what I can do. I'll look into it.
Well, if she's on a mobile, then I kind of understand, because if her signal's dropping out, then you know, so be it. But look, we've spent enough time on this. We need to move on and talk about this.
Well, I think we got by now. We have enough food for thought to include in say more as a question and more as scenarios in the next version and for discussion in Cartagena. That was the whole exercise. Going back to the document itself, what I've done is moved say the other decision points which were adopted by the working group on the previous call to the adopted section. So from section 4 to section 3, that's why it's so redlined. And there was one element, say the which has been rephrased, that's decision 7 in section 4, that's on page 7, the IDN string, the IDN CCTLD string cannot be confused with any combination of two ASCII letters.
I mean, we may need to refine that, but that's fundamentally what we mean, right?
Yeah.
Because we can't have PY or whatever. And of course, you get a, you can also presumably. Do we need to say anything about confusion with? I'm just trying to think. Is it possible, Bart, that you might have a circumstance where a and Cyrillic is probably the only one that it well, no, Greek probably as well, but Cyrillic is certainly would certainly apply, where you could technically have a Cyrillic string of more than two letters that is that it could be confused with an existing GTLD string or a new GTLD string. I don't mean one that's possible in the future. I mean one that exists. So for example, if somebody registers dot shoes as a GTLD, it's possible, isn't it, that in Cyrillic that the equivalent letters could mean a country?
Yes, but what you see as well, and this is the difficulty, as soon as you start working with abbreviations of country names, that in future they might be confusingly similar with existing new GTLDs.
Well, no, they can't be. No, if they exist, if they're granted today, then that prevents the GTLD from existing.
Yes, but in future, when you have existing new GTLDs.
Yes.
And so, say, put it the other way around. So if you look at the implementation plan, and it's in, there is a whole mechanism in there that was adopted to avoid potential confusion, as the one you're referring to.
Yes, I'm just making sure that we're continuing to use some sort of mechanism to not just worry about two letters, but also concern ourselves with the possibility that a string may in fact visually appear to be a string of Latin characters, even though they're not. They may visually appear to be a string of Latin characters that are could be confused with an existing GTLD.
Mm. And that mechanism is provided, and that will. I wanted to include that in the process document as well,
and that's
for discussion.
That's part of the technical test, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. All right. So, are we done with this document now? Have you got some more?
I think we can now adopt it, and I'll add the final note. Say that this item on non-contentiousness will be discussed. And then this one is done.
Manal's also sent a note through just now with a comment on decision F, which is the only one string per official language, saying that this criteria is even more restrictive than the one used in the fast track. Actually, I don't think it is. Is it? I mean, did we not? We said, didn't we, that well, the fast track is very clearly one IDN CCTLD string per official language. That's
yeah.
Right, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I'm not quite sure why she thinks that it's more restrictive. And then she goes on to say, another point is, I understand that as per our last call, Thailand should be able to apply for Siam, and Netherlands would also be able to apply for Holland. Yes, under certain circumstances. Applying this rule, does this mean they have to choose either of the names? Yes, that's right. Yes, it does mean that. It means that if you are, it means that in terms of Australia in Chinese, for example, you cannot apply for dot Australia in Chinese and dot Aussie in Chinese. You can only apply for one, and it's up to you to choose which one.
Yeah.
That's the intention, isn't it, Bart?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Otherwise, what we have to do, the alternative, and let's be clear here, the alternative, and I'll just use the European Union as an example, the alternative is that, you get to apply for just take Greece as an example, or Greek rather, as an example, they get to apply for .EU in Greek, they get to apply for .European Union in Greek, they get to apply for, other combinations of that in Greek, and that's not the point. The point is you get one in the official language. Otherwise, it's not a CCTLD.
That was, I think, the agreement, and that is the note. That was the agreement on the last call.
That's what I thought.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Does anyone else on this call have any other comments on the decision points document, acknowledging that we have some work to do in respect to contentiousness? All right. Cool. But we've got 10 minutes to address some other stuff.
Bart, can I ask one question again?
Yes, of course, Abby.
So it said in the, and perhaps I just missed it or slept through this part or didn't read, you had said that we had already been through a section of the principles and such where we had decided on the confidentiality, or you all had decided, I'm only observing the question.
No, confidentiality is in the next document.
It's not something I missed. Okay.
No, you didn't. No. Otherwise, it would have been included.
Otherwise, I would have had my hands
flapped
for having missed it. Thank you.
No, this is actually a conversation
about it without
excuse
you. Excuse me. Yeah. Yes. There's one thing which just pops into my mind which I don't see covered, and that is what's going to mean if you have one rule in one language, or one name, one language. What happens when a country changes its name?
Excellent question, Yarp. I imagine it's much the same as when a country gets a new ISO code.
Right.
It fits under the non-existent retirement of CCTLD policy,
mm-hmm.
which we will one day create.
But, I mean, this can be a source of contention. I mean, and countries do change names.
Well, they do.
And Myanmar, Burma is one of the most.
Is it officially accepted?
Yes, it even got a change of Alpha 2 code for that.
Really?
Right.
Honestly.
That brings you to that's the retirement document, I guess. The end of life of a country.
Yeah, I agree with you, but that I think is covered, as we said, by the retirement policy,
mm-hmm.
which currently doesn't exist. But we are working on that. Nothing to do with RDNs, just generally.
But do note that countries also change names on a regular basis, and hardly anybody notices it but the country itself. I mean, I believe Bolivia changed its name the last 2 years, 5 times. But that's always changing some part of the name.
I think I think to cover it, say as we said, that's in the say the decision document, is make it very explicit that the retirement rules apply as well when a country changes its name.
Sure.
I'll include
that. No, they don't apply. No, the retirement rules apply where a country wants to apply for a different IDN, CC, TLD in the same language. You know, so if you change your name from Burma to Myanmar, and you want Myanmar dot Myanmar, then you can't just say, but we want to keep dot Burma.
Yeah.
You've changed your name. If you've changed your name, then you presumably don't want the old one anymore. Otherwise, you wouldn't have changed your name, would you?
Yep.
So, again, the retirement rules, whatever they are, need to apply.
Yep.
So, you know, that's the way I think of it.
Yeah, but it needs to be included, probably.
Absolutely. We need to say, you know, we need to, in the bit where we say that normal rules of CCTLDs will apply, we should say, you know, in any new policy that's created... applies as well.
Yeah.
Yarp, is that all right?
I was just starting to think aloud, like having a cool-off period for the old names, but that's probably too much detail.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
We got 5 more minutes. Let me take you just explain what the other document is about, and use that for the discussion in 2 weeks. That's more or less the process document. It is, what I've done is, first of all, section 2 is probably the most important at this stage, because it's a general overview of, the process itself, the overall process for selection and of the IDN CCTLD, and it's building on the current fast track process with some adjustments. And what I've included as well, and this is section 3 and 4 of this document will in the next version include more detail. And section 5 are some more miscellaneous procedures and aspects. This includes the confidentiality idea as used under the fast track. It also includes the bit on the, of the CCNSO or of the fast track review on transparency. And so that's open for the discussion. It includes a new concept of a permanent IDN CCTLD advisory panel to the board in case the policy is not clear, and also a idea to have a review of the overall policy after 5 years, knowing this is a very new area, and I think it would be presumptuous to assume that we can build an overall policy for eternity. Then some transitional arrangements and the applicability of adopted policies to IDN CCTLDs. This is based on, this is from the IDNC working group discussion. And finally, creation of a list over time. There is, in the chair's interim report, there was the suggestion to create a list over time as IDN CCTLDs get introduced. I think these are current. That is the core of the document I sent, and I think we don't have time on this call to discuss it. But
Bart, what would be good, I think, would be if you could send a note out to the full list.
Yeah.
Just to say that saying that we spent a fair bit of time discussing other issues. We didn't get to discuss this document in detail, and it would be enormously helpful if people could read it and comment on it on the list prior to our next call.
Yep.
Because deathly silence on the list is not really all that helpful.
Yep, I will.
And if people could be encouraged perhaps to make comments on the list, even if they can't make the call, that would be really really useful.
Yep. So what I'll do as actions from this call is I will send out that email. I'll update version 3 and include the bit on retirements, a bit more on non-contentiousness, and send it out to the list again. So
I've sent Manal a note to say that I'll respond to her email in detail in the next couple of days.
Yeah. Okay, and that's all for me.
Anyone else?
Chris, just on that, Cheryl here, just on that one particular part that when I was reading the process selection document, struck me, as you know, I think through other things, the evaluation of new policies is incredibly important, and I noticed it is within 5 years after adoption, et cetera, et cetera. But I wondered if there should be a discussion next call on if a trigger for the CCNSO or not the board to trigger the review, but for a review to be triggered under specific circumstances. For example, something unforeseen, a loophole, an issue, or whatever comes up. I wouldn't want to have to live with a faulted policy because we're not due for the review yet. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah.
No, I agree. We can put something like that in there, can't we?
Oh, yeah, that's no problem at all.
Yeah,
okay,
great.
Good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's absolutely right. If we can give ourselves some flexibility around what we can and can't do. All right. Anyone else? Okay. Well, on that basis, can I thank you, all of you, for taking the time to join the call if Manal should be listening to the recording tomorrow, apologies, Manal, for the fact that you kept dropping off. And I'll talk to you all soon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cheers, everyone. Bye. Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.